Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast version of Ben and Woods. Thanks for finding us wherever you are, radio.com, downloading the radio.com app, or, of course, you can listen to us on your smart speaker and make sure you subscribe so you get our content every single day.
Absolutely. And there's lots of other podcasts from other hosts here in the building and here at 97.3. Make sure to check those out as well. But right now, back to Ben and Woods.
Scott down on one knee, arm extended. Here's the snap. Placement made. Kick is up. It is good. It is good. Mason B to the south end zone for a Lambeau leap. And he puts a dagger in the Lions. The Packers have won it 23-22.
Well, that was the denouement, the conclusion of the game. But it was what? The denouement.
The what?
It's the, you know, the conclusion, the ending of the story.
What is denouement?
Denouement?
We are a sport. We are our active demographic.
Hey, if Hammer knows men, onomatopoeia, men, I can throw in other literary references on this show.
Men 25 to 54, I can promise you there's not one guy in his car that knows what a denouement. I've never even heard of it. I was an English major. What's a denouement?
Yeah, if you were an English major, you need to know what a denouement is.
Oh,
it's, you
Ben.
Know, it's the final act, the reveal, why the you, end of the story.
Why do you do
the
this?
The denouement.
Why do you do this? I'm going to look it up. I've never even heard of it. How do you spell it?
It's a tough one.
D-A-U-X?
D-E, no, there's no X in it. D-E-N-E-U-M.
Is it one word?
O-N-T, something like that. Yeah, it's just one word. As you look it up, we can discuss Monday Night Football last night.
You SOB.
At Lambeau Field.
Can't even find it. Denouement.
Where the Detroit Lions got absolutely hosed. Just hosed.
Yeah.
As a football team by bad calls by the referees. I mean, now, again, they also got some good breaks that were given to them by the Green Bay Packers throughout that game. Which I'm glad that the NLCS game turned into a bit of a blowout because I was able to switch over and give a little more attention to the football than I probably would have otherwise. Now, I know you.
That makes one of us.
Yeah, I was wondering how much of this game you actually saw because you probably stuck it all the way out at the end of an 8-1 baseball game.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. I got to have it in me. I can't get enough. You're going to see, you know, you've been there. You know a really sad Woods after baseball season ends. I'm a wreck. My home life is shattered. I'm just a different human being. So I'm trying to take in as much baseball as I can, Benny. But I feel like right when the game ended was a perfect time to flip over because that's when kind of a lot of the hubbub started and I got to see Aaron Rodgers do Aaron Rodgers things. Of course, aided by the referees, just horrible calls.
Yeah, there was a series of questionable calls, but none bigger near the end of the game than a pair of illegal hands to the face penalties on Detroit's Trey Flowers, former Patriot, playing for the Detroit Lions, and in particular the second one, which was not a hands to the face at all. It was a hands to the shoulder.
Yes,
but he got flagged for it. It may not have given the Packers the win, but it certainly allowed them to run out the rest of the clock and kick the field goal as time expired so that Detroit wouldn't get the ball back. I want to get the audio here from ESPN and Booger McFarland, who was in the booth watching this play on replay. It was third down. Aaron Rodgers was forced to throw it away. It was going to be fourth down. They were going to have to, you know, kick a tougher field goal at the time. Here was Booger McFarland's reaction to seeing this phantom penalty thrown against the Detroit Lions' Trey Flowers.
Let's take a look at number 90, Trey Flowers, and see if this is indeed illegal hands to the face. Can't really see it from that angle.
It's going to come late. Here it comes. Towards there it is, coming there.
But again, where?
That's on the left shoulder once again.
Again.
On the left shoulder.
Is Bakhtiari selling that by arching back his head?
But again, that is a terrible call. That's twice on Trey Flowers in crucial situations that the refs have blown the call.
I have a lot of respect for a man named Booger. That's the most respect for a man named Booger that I've ever had. He's my most respected Booger, for sure. He is dead. He's dead on accurate here.
Well, one of the funny stats about that play is that Trey Flowers, before last night, had never been called in his career for illegal fans to the face.
That's
and
shocking.
Gets it twice in a key situations that helped the Packers pull out a victory last night. As you can imagine, Matt Patricia, the head coach of the Detroit Lions, wasn't too happy. He was kind of fuming but biting his tongue after the game.
You know, it's the head and neck area, so I'm not really sure. You know, I mean, they called it, so obviously they saw it. So we'll have to take a look at it.
That sounds like a man who doesn't want to get fined.
He does not want to cut that check, my friend. And you know, it's tough. It's tough. I have an idea, though, Ben, how to fix this. So, you know, we talked earlier in the offseason about the eye in the sky. You know, you're a big fan of the eye in the sky. Get a few people up there watching things. They're able to overturn things almost in real time, which I'm fine with. I mean, they're talking about robot umps in Major League Baseball. Why not have the eye in the sky? Why not have the blue ribbon panel up there making the decision? How about this, though, in the meantime? How about this? Is this too much? Two challenges per quarter. Two challenges per quarter on anything you want.
Then football games are going to take forever.
Who cares?
Forever.
Who cares? You, every coach, every player would sign up for that tomorrow because, with the Saints thing last year, this is a big game. I mean, that's a game the Lions have to have.
Well, they went to the, you know, extreme decision to go, you know, and add replay to pass interference penalties this year because of the outrage from last year's NFC Championship game, yet in practice, they don't use it at all.
Ever.
They don't overturn those penalties. They have basically thrown in a gallbladder, a meaningless, useless part of the game of football that no one uses.
Yep.
It's an appendix to football, is the new pass interference replay rule. And I think if you're adding more replay to try to overturn that call, you'll probably get a lot of the same things. Oh, was it hands to the face? Was it hands to the neck? Was it hands to the shoulder? We're just not going to overturn that. The problem with in baseball, you know what? It's, you know, you play 162 games, and I do believe that eventually calls are going to even out, you know, one way or the other. You're going to get some for you. You're going to get some against you over the course of a long season. Football's not a long season.
It's
16 games. One game often is the difference between making the playoffs and not making the playoffs. Will Brinson sent out a tweet last night, and just to underscore how big the game was for the Detroit Lions last night, had the Lions won that game, they would have been alone in first place in the NFC North with a 3-1-1 record.
That's massive.
Ahead of the 4-2 Packers, ahead of the 4-2 Vikings, ahead of the 3-2 Bears, a division where all teams would have had a winning record. By losing that game, they're now alone in last place.
It's massive.
In the NFC North, at 2-2-1 behind the Bears, Vikings, and now 5-1 Packers. That's one game, that's one potential call that doesn't just swing momentum. It doesn't swing a quarter. It doesn't just swing a game. It can swing with tiebreakers an entire season on one bad call that they can't fix. And you can't give that back to Matt Patricia. He may end up getting fired because his team doesn't make the playoffs at the end of the season. I mean, this changes lives when you get bad calls like this in an NFL game.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. And I just don't know. I don't know what you do at this point. And you know, somebody made the point last night. You know, if a player screws up, he's got to go face the media. He's got to stand there with microphones in his face, fresh out of the shower, wrapped in a towel, saying, you know what? Yeah, that was a really bad move on my part, getting a, you know, hands to the face illegal penalty. He's got to stand there and face that music. These refs, they go in the locker room, they shower, they eat their post-game meal, they get in their car, and they go home. And there's no accountability for umpires. There's no accountability for referees. And it sucks. It sucks. It sucks for these guys that are out there.
Matt Patricia has a better chance of getting fired because of that call than the ref who made it.
There is no question about it. There's no
That's the funny
question
part.
About it.
Sad part. Sad, actually, is what it is.
It's just, you see it, man. You see this over refereeing. In that type of situation in that game, You cannot call that penalty. You just can't, unless it's so blatantly obvious, and it wasn't. And they should be able to go look at that and change it. They should be. And I don't care how long it takes.
So now the Packers are in good shape at 5-1. When we did our roundtable here, our football season roundtable on that opening Thursday, I picked the Packers as my Super Bowl team from the NFC. So I'm feeling pretty good right now about that selection and the way they're playing right now. They've got a little wiggle room thanks to a bad call.
Couple of them.
Could make a difference between home field advantage, bye in the first round, whatever. That's how critical and pivotal one bad call in the NFL can be.
And listen, it's not like we're going to stop watching, but it is getting to that point where you're like, you're terrified. You're sitting on your hands the whole time. If you're a Lions fan, we have Greg Metty, who does our Cash Metty segment on Thursday. Cash Metty is a freaking Lions fan. He's actually the only one I know, the only one I've ever met in person.
I know another one.
I know. He is the only one. He was losing his mind last night for good reason. And it's one of those deals where you hate to,
he was going to lose his mind no matter what.
That's fair.
Pretty much always does.
That's true. But it's, I'm watching the ALCS, and I'm watching every pitch counts, right? Every pitch matters. I'm not going to be the guy if the Yanks get hosed. I'm not going to be the guy screaming about it. It happens. Like you said, it does even out in baseball. But you saw it the other night. The fake foul tip that Gary Sanchez swung and missed at. He didn't even get close to it. Next pitch is a foot outside. They ring him up. It happens. So they get one, we get one. But in football, critical times like that, man, it's got to kill a guy like Cash Metty.
All right, Woods, I'm getting some responses to the worst jersey you ever purchased.
Yeah.
Getting some good tweets on that, so I'll have some of the your responses out there coming up. Plus, LeBron James, got to get into this. Was late last night. You're probably already asleep when LeBron James.
It.
You did see this?
Okay. Remember I texted you guys? I said,
oh, yeah, that's right.
I said, so LeBron's pretty much effed, is exactly what I said.
Man, I don't know that he could have done a worse job standing and answering questions about this China Daryl Morey tweet controversy than he did last night. We're going to get to that coming up next here on Ben and Woods. Right now, let's get our first check of traffic on a Tuesday morning here on 97.3 The Fan and say hello to Kelly Danick. I'm getting tweets. I asked the question after seeing those Bryce Harper jerseys that had been modified last night at the NLCS. What is the worst jersey you ever purchased, or what is the one you regret the most buying? Getting a lot of San Diego people who just are regretting Chargers jerseys. I got one now, and I was going, Sanders 31 has a picture of it. He says, I think I wore it twice. I was T-Dub 620. I was racking my brain. Who? Sanders.
Yeah, it was like Emmanuel Sanders.
No, I don't think. Dion didn't play.
No.
And so I Bob Sanders, the former safety, I believe, from the Indianapolis Colts, who they signed as this free agent, was going to fix the secondary. Did not fix the Chargers secondary.
He was a good,
he was
a good player
in Indy. Oh, yeah,
he was
sure.
Really good.
Getting some Keenan Allen, Antonio Cromartie.
Cromartie's a big player.
Sean Merriman.
Literally.
Matt Kemp. There's Oscar. Said he bought a Matt Kemp jersey.
Yeah, lots of people got
Scott
those.
Bought a Josh Hamilton jersey once that he regrets.
I bought a Josh Hamilton jersey, and then the world went crumbling down.
Joe Rigby says, every one of my 30-plus San Diego 30. Charger jerseys that are now packed up and stored away. That's one of the reasons why I don't buy jerseys. Is that I know players are now so transitory. They here today, gone tomorrow. Even if your favorites, or they could be not good guys, and they're going to be arrested in a couple of weeks.
I mean, think about the kid in Boston that's like 14 years old that saved up, and all he wanted was his Mookie Betts jersey, and he got his Mookie Betts jersey, and Mookie wins the MVP, and they win the World Series, and he's like, I'm going to have this jersey forever. And now the owner comes out and says, "We can't afford to keep Mookie Betts. Now you're screwed."
And then occasionally, by the way, guys will change numbers.
Yes, they'll change
That's
a number
true.
On you, and you're screwed. It's yet another reason. I will say that's why I don't buy jerseys, but that's not why.
Jorge says, has to be Ryan Leaf, Sean Burrows, a close second.
Ooh.
And then here's the one I knew someone did. Lightning Bolt, 619, David Boston, 89. Big free agent wide receiver pickup for the Chargers. Everyone was so excited about that. Yeah, that didn't pan out at all for the Chargers. So if you keep sending them in, I'll see if there's a champion at the end of the day for worst jersey purchase.
David Boston was a total bust here, wasn't he?
He was.
Total bust. It's like Joey Galloway in Dallas.
Maybe worst free agent signing the Chargers ever made.
That's terrible.
Which is just saying something. All right, coming up in just under a half an hour, we're going to play some Real or Fake. We've got an unbelievable prize package this week. We're giving away tickets to Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios Hollywood. And our winners are also going to qualify for a trip to Vegas, including a two-night stay at the MGM Grand Las Vegas, two tickets to experience Jabberwocky's Dreams, a journey within at the MGM Grand. Performances Thursday through Monday. So be ready to call in and go head-to-head against Woods coming up at about 6:50 with a little Real or Fake. Want to get to, and I don't think this will be the only time we bring it up this morning, but I want to first just listen to LeBron James from last night. The Lakers took on the Warriors at Staples Center in a preseason game. LeBron didn't even play, but it was the first chance for the media back here in this country since the Lakers returned from their China trip with the Brooklyn Nets and all the controversy that ensued after Rockets GM Daryl Morey sent his tweet in support of Hong Kong protesters. China basically went nuts about that. And LeBron has been silent, until this point. One of the thought leaders in the NBA. Everyone wondering, what is he going to say about this? Very outspoken on issues of social justice. Is he going to say something controversial? Is he going to, pass on making a comment? But what he actually said, to me, just like completely started this news cycle over again, talking about the NBA in China. I don't know that he could have done a worse job in answering the question than he did. Here's LeBron. We're just going to play the raw audio from last night at Staples Center.
I think that's another situation that should stay behind closed doors. We are to see what happens with any one of our players or with an owner or with a GM at a later date. I think when we all sit back and learn from the situation that happened, understand that what you could tweet or could say, and we all talk about this freedom of speech. Yes, we all do have freedom of speech, but at times there are ramifications for the negative that can happen when you're not thinking about others and you're only thinking about yourself. So I don't believe, I don't want to get into a word or sentence feud with Daryl, Morey, but I believe he wasn't educated on the situation at hand. And he spoke, and so many people could have been harmed, not only financially but physically, emotionally, spiritually. So just be careful what we tweet and we say and what we do. Even though yes, we do have freedom of speech, but there can be a lot of negative that comes with that too.
Okay, I mean we can break this down, but there are so many levels of bad on that statement by LeBron James last night. First of all, to make the whole thing kind of about him and the Lakers and, how they could have been harmed.
He said it there, but he really said it in his tweet later. That's like he kind of glossed over that.
Well, I think he was trying to fix the comments basically when he said that Daryl Morey was uneducated about the situation. He was saying, oh, no, I mean, he was uneducated about the consequences. I mean, he didn't know that all this would happen after his tweet.
Well, listen, and that's a point that I made on our show last week. I said, man, when Daryl Morey hit send, I wonder if he knew the impact that tweet was going to have. And a guy had actually written me and said, why do you, Woods, why do you love oppression? And I said, dude, clearly I don't love oppression. I'm saying that sometimes one tweet can gather so much steam that it can cause an international incident. And I ask you this, Ben, if Daryl Morey doesn't send that tweet at all, are we even talking about this?
No.
That's the wildest part. It's like that's how in a bubble we are. All this is still going on.
But Daryl Morey deleted the tweet
right, when
he said, oh, people said that's going to have a negative effect. Okay, delete it.
He deleted it.
Apologized.
Yep. I've been there.
He backed off. So I don't think what LeBron is saying here is irrelevant. I mean, what people were looking to LeBron for last night was commentary on, the freedom of speech issue at play, whether the NBA should be in business in China with a communist regime that limits the freedoms of its own people. That's what everyone's looking to LeBron for, not some sort of tisk-tisk, you might have cost us the bottom line. You know, I'm trying to sell shoes over there in China. And, yeah, your tweet was pretty insensitive and thoughtless about the impact that you have on me and my team and our trip to China. That's not at all what anyone was looking for from LeBron James last night. And in that sense, I think he swung and just missed a complete whiff of a statement. And I was so surprised because LeBron had to know this was coming. I mean, he had days to, you know, meet with his people, craft a statement. I was expecting something pretty tame, but in support of free speech and self-determination rights of all people. Hey, you know, I'm LeBron James. I absolutely support the rights of people everywhere around this planet for freedom of speech and self-determination and democracy. I'm not really that versed on the specific situation in China, so I'm not going to comment on that. But, hey, you know, of course I support all of that. You got none of that from LeBron James. You got a tisk-tisk of a general manager for an ill-timed tweet and the damage that he could have done basically to the NBA brand and LeBron's own brand. And it was just, it came off as whiny and very self-absorbed, the commentary.
Are we surprised that LeBron James is self-absorbed?
I'm a little surprised. Yeah, I am. I actually am a little bit surprised.
I'm not surprised in the least that LeBron James is self-absorbed. I mean,
okay, I'm surprised that
that he's not smart enough to not act self-absorbed.
Exactly. Yeah, that he's not smart enough to craft something that appears quite a bit more progressive.
So we actually, in this case, we want him to be disingenuous.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want him to be the opposite of what he is, because it makes us feel better. And that's there. Now we're getting into something totally different, but we want LeBron James.
We can't all just say what we're feeling at every moment.
No, I mean, you're right.
Society would collapse.
Trust me.
If we weren't disingenuous, 60 to 70% of the time our life.
I play the game in my head sometimes. When I see a tweet, I will actually say out loud the response that I want to give, and it's never good. It's never good. Okay, but you can't do that. Okay, but that's the first thing that pops in your head. The thing that got me about LeBron was the tweet, the second one. My team in this league just went through a difficult week. I think people need to understand what a tweet or statement can do to others. And I believe nobody stopped and considered what would happen. Could have waited a week to send it. Now, that is the most damning evidence against LeBron James, because there are people over there fighting for their lives in China. And to say, yeah, man, it was really tough on us.
And when LeBron cares about something, he doesn't wait a week to send a tweet.
Correct.
He sends it when he wants to send
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we'll talk more about this. I'd love to get some thoughts from some of our listeners out there. If you want to tweet us at Ben and Woods,
Benny,
you can do that as well.
He got killed.
Yeah.
I mean, he got killed.
We'll bring
for
it up.
Some
of the columns, the USA Today column by Dan Wolkin. We'll talk about that later. It is straight fire. Straight fire. So that is coming up. Next, though, we're going to talk some baseball playoffs. Ben Ryder covering the Houston Astros. Game 3 of the ALCS taking place this afternoon. That series could go either way. Love having Ben on the show. He's going to join us next year on Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. 97.3 The Fan invites you to join former Aztecs men's basketball coach Steve Fisher along with current coach Brian Dutcher and the SDSU men's basketball team for the annual Walk to Defeat ALS. Coming up October 20th, 8 a.m., Mission Bay's De Anza Cove. For more info, just go to alsasd.org. About to talk a little ALCS with Ben Ryder. First, let's get a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. Here's Suda Vincent.
And this report is brought to you by Land Rover. Looks like most of the slow go is leaving the South Bay as you approach the 54, heading north on both 5 and 805. 5 stays tight through Logan Heights. 805 traffic would be mostly into Mission Valley. Then again, bunching up Claremont to University City. Got a lot of bumper-to-bumper out of Santee on the 52, and South 15 jammed up from the North County on past the 78 to Via Rancho. The new Range Rover Evoque was designed to open your eyes to the possibilities of what's right in your own neighborhood. Visit your San Diego County Land Rover retailer for details on the Range Rover Evoque. Land Rover, above and beyond. Suda Vincent with Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan.
Well, Woodsy, this is really has the makings of an epic series.
No, it does.
Between
it really
the Yankees and Astros. And, you know, I know that you're a Yankees fan, but yep. I'm kind of happy that the Astros walked that one off because...
Oh, I know you are.
I don't want to see this thing, you know, go down to 4 or 5 games. I want to see a 6 or 7 game showdown between what I think are the two best teams in baseball right now And we are on the road. And joining us right now here on 97.3 The Fan, Ben Woods from Sports Illustrated. Ben Ryder is with us. Ben, it is always great to have you on. Good morning.
Hey, guys. How are you?
I'm good. I mean, you agree, right? These are the two best teams left in baseball. Nothing against the Washington Nationals, who might win the World Series based on how their pitching is thrown right now. But, you know, top to bottom, they're not in the class of the Astros or the Yankees.
No, they're certainly not. And, you know, this is the series that we wanted to see in the AL pretty much all season long, at least from early on. And here we are. And I agree with you. It would be great if this thing goes 7-6-7, something like that. But, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, this is the World Series. We're watching it right now. I'm not so sure, guys. If the Nationals take care of business today and sweep the Cardinals, they're going to have like a week off.
Yep.
Before the World Series, they're going to be completely rested. You wonder if whoever emerges from what's going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight in the ALCS, you know, might have some after effects from that, facing a rested and obviously very good Nats team.
Well, I mean, and I've seen already, I mean, fans clamoring for a Nats-Astros World Series because of the pitching matchups. The marquee pitchers they're just through the roof. I mean, you got Greinke and Verlander and Scherzer and Strasburg and Gerrit Cole. You know, hate to bring him up last because he's been ungodly good. But yeah, people are. Look, I'm a Yankee fan, and I'll say it. Like, I honestly feel like that they're being written off a little bit right now. Do you see that at all in the national media?
No.
Well, I think I just see it on my Twitter.
Maybe on Twitter, but no. I mean, it's crazy to write off the Yankees. I mean, you know, if you look at certain predictions websites, like I think 538 Nate Silver's site has the Yankees still as like a 52% chance of winning this series now that we're tied 1-1. So, no, I mean, I'm sure people have various reasons for writing them off. You shouldn't. I guess one thing I'll say is the lineup did look just less dangerous without Giancarlo Stanton in it in game two. And there's not any clarity right now about his quad injury, at least as far as I've seen. But, you know, he's somebody they've waited all season for. Seemed like he was healthy. Hit that big home run in game one. That really would be a serious loss, even though they've gotten this far without him.
Ben Ryder is with us, author, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. He literally wrote the book on the Astros' first title run. It's called Astro Ball, and I imagine another run doesn't hurt sales, especially having – is that Carlos Correa on the cover?
Yeah, he's on the cover of the paperback. He had a pretty good night last night. But look, the point of the book all along was that they didn't go through that long rebuilding process for a one-and-done shot at winning a championship in 2017. The entire design was to sustain a winner that could get to this tournament year after year after year. I guess the one thing that has surprised me is that they've gotten better every year. Like, no, they didn't win last year, but fundamentally it was a better ball club. And certainly this year's club, top to bottom, is better than either of the previous two. That's a pretty incredible trick pulled off by Jeff Luno in that club.
So what is different about this run? I mean, you know, the old saying is that it's harder to win the second one than the first one. But you have that also knowledge that you've done it before. So as you look at this Astros team, you know, what are the similarities and differences to their title run from 2 years ago?
Well, the core is the same, I think. If you look at especially the offensive core, Springer, Altuve, Correa, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, look, to be quite honest, you have a guy who's pitching like the best pitcher in the world right now in Gerrit Cole. That's a big difference. The bullpen is certainly better than it was back then. You remember A.J. Hinch in 2017 had some trouble figuring out who to go to. That hasn't been as much of an issue this year. And a lot of that has to do with Jeff Luno's just long-term planning. He's got kind of a longer time horizon for building a club than a lot of GMs, and it's paid off. Perhaps my favorite stat about this club, 2011 to 2013, they had the most losses over a three-year stretch of any club in half a century. Now, 2017 to 2019, they've had the most wins for any club over a three-year stretch in half a century. If you need one stat to encapsulate the incredible turnaround they've undertaken here, that's it for me.
We're talking to Ben Ryder. He wrote the book, Astro Ball, and he's a senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Talking a little ALCS. Any concern about the Astros offense or lack thereof? I mean, 3 runs in 2 games, I think, you know, I'm sure they're even a little bit surprised by it. Springer got going a little bit the other day. Correa in the 7 hole of all places found his stroke. So any concerns about the rest of the guys in the lineup?
Sure, a little bit. I mean, they're not hitting with runners in scoring position very much. It seems like, you know, even Alex Bregman, their leader, MVP candidate, hasn't really gotten going yet. And it's tough when you're facing this run of relievers the Yankees can throw at you. Forget the starters, just, you know, 98-mile-an-hour thrower after 98-mile-an-hour thrower. I think that group could keep anybody down, and they'll certainly want to produce more than they have to this point.
The acquisition of Zach Greinke by the Astros in this run. Now, he hasn't exactly been dominant in the postseason, but he could still end up being kind of the pivotal figure for this season. I know you wrote about it. How did that kind of come about and the decision-making process behind that acquisition?
Right. Well, that was the cover of Sports Illustrated last week, an inside story of the deadline acquisition of Zach Greinke, which proved to be the biggest trade anybody made right at the last minute. The thinking was, look, we have Verlander and Cole. That's 4 starts taken care of. At the time, you remember, Wade Miley was like one of the better pitchers in the league.
Yep.
He fell off significantly in September. He didn't even make the ALCS roster. But Jeff Luhnow was basically looking for a guy who was as good or better than Wade Miley to take either 1 or 2 starts in a 7-game series. He had a list of about 8 or 9 pitchers. A bunch of them got traded, you know, like Trevor Bauer, Marcus Stroman. Others he realized were not going anywhere, like Madison Bumgarner. So it really came down to Zach Greinke. The Diamondbacks demanded a 4-player package of minor leaguers. Luhnow kept saying no, no, no. The Diamondbacks wouldn't budge. And finally, with Jim Crane, the owner's urging, he gave up the 4 players and got back the best pitcher, best player moved at the deadline. And no, he hasn't been great this postseason. I thought his last start was perfectly fine. It was a quality start. But the fact is, the Yankees, to win this series, pretty much have to get a win off of either Justin Verlander or Gerrit Cole, right? I mean, so Greinke's almost a bonus. If Greinke can win one of his starts, then the series is tilted heavily to Houston. But, you know, if you get 4 starts out of Verlander and Cole, that's where you start if you're the Yankees. You have to win one of those.
Hey, Ben, what do you make of the all the talk about the baseball? Not just this season, but now in the postseason, and some people who think that the postseason baseball is different than the regular season baseball. Batters who say, hey, you know, I feel like I got that one.
Yeah.
It would have been a home run in the regular season. It's not going out, and all of a sudden we've got these no-hit bids and, you know, a lot of low-scoring games in the postseason where maybe that didn't happen. Is there a conspiracy? I mean, what do you make of all of this?
I think it's pretty clear it's different. And the best evidence to me is what you just mentioned, the players' reactions, right? Like, they know. Just the other night, I think Correa hit one to the track
yep.
that he thought was gone. Judge's, like, second potential shot fell on the track. It was pretty clear he thought he got that one, too. Like, the players know. They do this all the time. They know what it feels like to hit a home run. Clearly, something's different. I think some of the fundamental stats, as far as exit velocities and outcomes, show that it's different. Now, is it a conspiracy by Major League Baseball? I still think the most probable explanation is that it's not intentional, that something in the manufacturing process was different for whatever reason. I would be surprised if Major League Baseball all of a sudden tried to change the game in the postseason after having it go this way all season long. But the fundamental question, like, is something different? I would say that the evidence suggests yes, it is.
Well, so, Ben, you got to keep that narrative going of, great pitching always beats great hitting in the playoffs, because that's the narrative that happens almost every single year. And look, these are great pitchers. I mean, you look at the remaining staffs that are left. These are the marquee guys in Major League Baseball. So I'm going to lean towards the fact that everything is amped up in the postseason and that these guys are the best in the world and the best that the game has to offer. And that's kind of what I'm leaning on is we see it every year. I mean, none of us should be surprised that there were low-scoring games in the playoffs. These pitchers amp it up. I mean, imagine Max Scherzer amped up a notch, and Severino and Gerrit Cole, all these guys they're bringing it, man, and it's really hard to hit those guys.
You're right. I mean, this Nats-Cardinals series is just complete domination so far by the Nats. I can't believe it. They've scored 13 runs. The Cardinals have 11 hits, right? Like, the Nats starters have allowed no earned runs yet in 21 and two-thirds innings. And look, to be honest, you know, I agree with you. It's the best pitchers doing what they do best. But arguably the best pitcher in baseball the second half of the year was Jack Flaherty of the Cardinals. Yeah. He had an ERA under one in the second half. And the Nationals even hit him last night. So, you know, it seems like the Nationals, no matter what you think of the baseballs, are a team of destiny right now, at least to get to the World Series. And if they do, it'll be a great matchup, no matter who comes out of the AL.
Hey, Ben, I always appreciate your time. Again, anyone wants to check it out, the book's called Astro Ball. We keep hoping that the Padres are on that same course. not quite there yet, but we'll keep our fingers crossed. And, Ben, thank you very much.
Well, I always say the next potential Astros type of team is the Padres, so there's reason for hope out there even yet.
We always appreciate that. Ben Ryder, Sports Illustrated. With us. You start dialing right now. We're going to play Real or Fake in about 2 minutes. 833-288-0973. Take the fourth caller. Hammer's standing by. If you want to go head-to-head against Woods for a chance at our super prize package that we got this week, start dialing now. I just wanted to ask you, though, about something that Ben said just a moment ago. He said the players always know, and that was in reference to the ball, you know, just how it feels coming off the bat. They can tell. In baseball, players always do know.
Yeah, they do.
They know if it was a strike, if it was a ball. The batter knows. The catcher knows.
Yeah, like
if they
90%,
were tagged out.
Yeah,
if they got, you know, they got to first base. If you could somehow force players to be honest, like they played the game with truth serum,
if like,
you wouldn't need umpires in baseball.
If,
you really wouldn't.
If they could, if they were up at the dish and the guy paints 96 in the black and the
just
guy
walk
just
away.
Tips his hat and goes, "That's a strike. You got me."
They do know.
It would be amazing.
But they always want to get away with something.
I've played scrimmages before where the catcher calls balls and strikes. It never works. It never works. That's a strike. I'm like, are you out of your mind? Balls at my chin. It never works. It never works.
But
it
they
can
all,
never happen.
They all, it's crazy how often a pitch is a half an inch outside.
Oh, they know.
And the batter will look back
it's
when it's called a strike and look, that was off the plate. And The video always shows, yeah, the batter
knew.
It was
off the plate.
Batter
knew.
It was off the right. They always know.
Well, the great story I heard about Tony Gwynn from my buddy that, you know, knew him really well, he would get that box of bats from Louisville Slugger, and he would pull it out. He would give it a once over and just look at it and go, no. He'd find a flaw, a tiny flaw, and he'd go, nope. And he would just toss them to the side. He'd end up out of, you know, getting 30 bats. He'd keep three, and there's 27 bats that look amazing that anybody else on the team wouldn't know. He knew what felt right and it right in his hand and what looked right. They know. This is what they do for a living. We know what good radio sounds like. We don't always execute it, but you know when it's bad. You really
do. You do. You absolutely do. All right, let's get to our game. It is time on Ben and Woods to play a little Real or Fake.
Some are here for the compelling sports talk with Ben and Woods.
Yeah, you can go plow through another donut.
It's time for Real or Fake on 97.3 The Fan. Tell the people what they'll win today.
Oh, what a prize package we have for you this week. Our Real or Fake winner will get a pair of tickets to Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios Hollywood, and they'll also qualify for a chance to win a trip to Las Vegas, including a two-night stay at the MGM Grand Las Vegas, two tickets to experience Jabberwocky's Dreams, A Journey Within, live at the MGM Grand. Performances Thursday through Monday. All you have to do in a five-round game is beat or even tie Woods. But if you aren't our contestant, remember, if he doesn't win, we throw the prize back into the hopper for the rest of our listeners. So, Woodsy,
yes,
you will be going up against Eddie in Oceanside
Let's
today.
Go.
Eddie, welcome to Real or Fake. Are you ready to play our game? Wait, hold on. Eddie,
there he is.
Eddie,
he is.
You there?
Hi, Eddie.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Today, Steven Strasburg pitched the Washington Nationals to the brink of the World Series last night. But how much do you know about the local star? Today on Real or Fake, I will give you a factoid on Steven Strasburg. You have to tell me if it's real.
I love this.
Or if it's a fake fact. I completely fabricated. Eddie, we'll let Woodsy go first on this one. Let's try this. In his first big league start, Steven Strasburg broke the Nationals team record with 14 strikeouts. Real or fake?
That is real.
Did. First game against the Pittsburgh Pirates,
I remember
I believe. 14 Ks. All right, it's just that easy, Eddie. Let's try You, and as a junior at SDSU, Steven Strasburg struck out 23 Utah Utes in a single game. Real or fake, Eddie?
Jeez, that sounds ungodly. I'll say fake.
That was real. He did 23 strikeout game in college. All right, it's still a long game, Eddie. Don't worry. Let's go to round number two. Woodsy, let's try this one. Steven Strasburg was so out of shape when he arrived at SDSU that the strength coach nicknamed him Slothberg.
I'm going to say real.
It is real. Wow. Yeah, Steven was not known for his work ethic until he made a few changes in life and turned himself into the pitcher he is today. All right, Eddie.
I can relate.
Let's get going. Let's try this one, Eddie. Real or fake? Steven Strasburg was originally recruited to SDSU as a shortstop. Real or fake, Eddie?
Real.
No, it was always a pitcher coming
only,
out
right?
of West Hills. Yeah. All right, Eddie, you're down 2-0. Woods is doing pretty well here. Let's try this one.
Jeez.
Woodsy, let's try this. Steven Strasburg won a gold medal with Team USA at the 2008 Beijing Olympics. Real or fake?
I feel like this is a trick question. Fake.
Won a bronze. He actually lost to Cuba in the semifinals.
Yeah, I know
they did
you.
Not win. All right, Eddie, we need to get you going here. Let's try this one. Eddie, real or fake, Steven Strasburg posted a 1-10 record on the mound his junior year at West Hills High School. Real or fake?
Real.
That is real.
That is shocking.
Wasn't really much of a prospect coming out of high school at San Diego State.
Shocking. 1-10.
All right, you're still in the game, Eddie. Round number four, Woodsy. Let's try this one. ESPN dubbed his June 2010 Major League debut against the Pirates Strazapalooza. Real or fake?
Fake.
They called it Strasmus.
Strasmus.
Strasmus. All right, Eddie, let's try round four for you. Steven Strasburg made the cover of Sports Illustrated after his second major league start. Real or fake, Eddie?
Fake.
No, that was real.
Oh, did he?
Two starts on the cover of Sports Illustrated. We just had Ben Ryder on. He probably could have told you about that. Woodsy, last round. Steven Strasburg's middle name is Sean, making his initials SSS.
Fake.
James. Very good, Woodsy. And finally, Eddie, Steven Strasburg threw a no-hitter in his final home game at Tony Gwynn Stadium. Real or fake?
Real.
That is real. He beat Air Force, but unfortunately, Woodsy has swamped you by sweeping the board 5-2. Eddie, I'm sorry. Thank you for playing, but Eddie's loss is your gain out there. That means we're going to throw the prize back into the hopper, and if you want to win those passes to Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights, and qualify for the trip to Las Vegas, be the sixth caller right now at 833-288-0973. 833-288-0973. Time to steal the prize. Thanks for playing a little Real or Fake.
That was Real or Fake with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, the one that got me the most, the real there, was the strength coach nicknaming him Slothberg.
Slothberg. Well, that strength coach today would be fired.
Well, yeah.
Just so you know.
Well, I don't know. Aren't they supposed to be kind of motivational? Wouldn't that motivate you a little bit?
You're not allowed to be motivational anymore. Parents get upset. They call you. You called my kid Slothberg. I want your job. Twitter goes after him. It's over.
When Steven Strasburg was a freshman at SDSU, he was just a middle reliever for the Aztecs. And then the velocity was there. They made him the closer later his freshman year. Then sophomore, he broke out as a starter, and then he had the huge junior year and became the first pick in the draft. Crazy story.
Yeah, you want to know, what did you do between sophomore and junior year that summer? Like, what was your work ethic like?
Crazy story. All right, I was having some flashbacks to some old Charger games last night on Monday Night Football.
All that acid.
I'll tell you why. Half the show still to go. Don't go anywhere. It's Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.